Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Jeff Young. After more than a month, there is at last hope that the Gulf oil gusher will stop. As we record this program, officials are cautiously optimistic about the top kill procedure to plug the leak. But the damage continues. Cleanup crews scramble to contain the oil, and the president tries political damage control. President Obama defended his handling of the crisis and put restrictions on offshore drilling, a six-month moratorium on deepwater permits, a suspension of Arctic oil exploration, and the cancellation of leases in Virginia's waters. It was a remarkable step back from the president's expansion of offshore drilling announced just 8 weeks ago.
The overall framework, which is to say domestic oil production should be part of our overall energy mix, I think continues to be the right one. Where I was wrong was in my belief that the oil companies had their act together when it came to worst-case scenarios.
Independent commission will investigate lax government oversight of drilling, and the head of the Troubled Minerals Management Service resigned. And the president said the Gulf tragedy teaches a larger lesson. The country needs cleaner energy. He called on the Senate to pass the stalled energy and climate bill.
If nothing else, this disaster should serve as a wake-up call that it's time to move forward on this legislation. It's time to accelerate the competition with countries like China who've already realized the future lies in renewable energy. And it's time to seize that future ourselves.
We also now have the first official estimate of just how much oil has spewed into the Gulf. A team of scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey says it's somewhere between 12 and 25,000 barrels a day. That's 2 to 5 times more than BP first estimated, and makes this the largest oil spill in U.S. history. It's already been declared a fishery disaster in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Tens of thousands of people in those states make their living from fish, shrimp, crabs, and oysters. They supply more than 40% of the nation's seafood and 70% of the country's oysters. Oysters are also vital for the ecological role they play, filtering water and forming reefs that shelter animals and the shore itself. We have two reports on the Gulf's oysters and the people who depend on them. We start with Living on Earth's Ingrid Lobet on the Alabama coast.
In a working yard on the shore of Mobile Bay, trucks loaded with neon yellow and orange boom roll in and out. This is now a spill response staging area. Nearby is one of the Gulf's famous seafood canneries, and in its backyard is what might be the world's largest ever pile of oyster shells.
We have a mountain of oyster shells. It's huge. Maybe 30, 40, 50 feet high of oyster shells, a football field long. And those oyster shells need to get back in the water, don't they?
Bill Finch is with the Alabama Nature Conservancy. The shells need to get back into the water, he says, so that baby oysters can attach to them.
There's a lot of mud in places like Mobile Bay and sand, and oysters can't attach to mud and sand very well. They need something hard to attach to. Over tens of thousands of years, oysters sort of built their own architecture, sort of built it from the base up.
About half of that architecture, the Gulf Coast oyster reefs, is now gone, attacked by carnivorous snails and fished out. That's what led the Nature Conservancy and other groups across 17 Gulf and eastern states to experiment with building up new reefs.
Come up with something good for them to attach to. And the very best thing that an oyster can attach to, we've decided, is another oyster. Surprise, surprise.
So on the days before the Deepwater Horizon oil well blew out, workers in this yard spent their time packing discarded oyster shells into special mesh bags. Then they sunk the bags offshore, building a mile of new reef. The Conservancy's Oyster Restoration Project Manager, Jeff DiQuattro, says everyone should care about oysters. For one thing, the reefs they construct turn out to be a favorite place for fish to prowl.
All the Gulf species of fish, at some stage, come in contact with some form of oysters, whether it be an oyster bed or an oyster reef. They're synonymous to coral reef.
DiQuattro and Marine Programs Director Judy Hayner say oysters are unappreciated filterers of water.
Oysters filter several gallons of water a day. Some say 25 gallons, some say 50 gallons. It's a lot. They filter metals, they filter sediment, anything that of a certain size that they can fit into their mouths.
I would say a minor sheen they could probably handle and maybe even recover from, but something that is a big, gloppy, you know, something, they're filter feeders. So that's going to really kind of clog the innards, if you will. And that's going to be really tough for them to save themselves from.
Like Bill Finch, Hainer and DeQuatro worry about the mile of new reef they've created.
This could be a big setback.
Oysters are at pretty shallow depths, normally near shoals or near shore. So they risk being coated with oil at every stage.
If the young oysters adrift in the Gulf currents are carried into a cloud of petroleum, it will likely happen just as nature is calling them to sprout a foot, to touch a rough, hard surface where they can attach and grow.
Ingrid Lobet reporting from Alabama's Mobile Bay. Just to the south, I got on a boat for a look at the marshes of Louisiana.
Hold on.
In Plaquemines Parish, the oil is slowly coming ashore, despite miles of booms. Some fishing grounds and oyster beds have already been shut down. This patch of Breton Sound is still clean. But scientist John Lopez fears the oil could jeopardize his group's attempts to use oysters to protect the fragile coast.
This is a location where we're trying to do our oyster reef project, and you're on the edge of the marsh, and essentially from here on out, you've got open sound and Gulf of Mexico. So this little island would be one of the first areas that would be impacted if the oil did move in significant quantities into Breton Sound.
Lopez pulls his boat up to a small patch of land where terns are nesting. He directs the Coastal Sustainability Program for the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation. He's keeping tabs on two environmental crises out here, the oil and the disappearing wetlands. Louisiana loses about 25 square miles of land each year. That's a football field every 40 minutes. Sediment from the Mississippi that once regenerated land is trapped behind the river's levees. Canals and oil and gas pipelines cut through marsh, increasing erosion, and hurricanes rip out huge chunks. This little island was once 10 acres.
But about 90% of this island was washed away in Katrina, and right now there's just an acre left. If something's not done, probably one more storm, this island will be washed away entirely.
Lopez and his assistant, Andy Baker, pull up a chunk of concrete called an oyster ball. They scrape some samples from the muck in hopes of finding the first tiny colonizers that might one day build a new reef and rebuild the marsh. Unless the oil hits.
This little fragile area is one of the most vulnerable to oil. It's really unknown if this marsh scrap can recover from oiling or if it will be the last blow that will cause this to just completely erode into the sea.
Back at the dock in the little town of Pointe La Hache, oyster fishermen unload 100-pound burlap sacks of oysters onto pallets. These oysters are bound for the restaurants of New Orleans and beyond. Oyster fisherman Warren Duplessis says he's lucky to still be fishing, but he knows the luck won't hold.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, there ain't no couple of booms going to be able to hold it back. The magnitude of that spill, there ain't no way you're going to be able to stop all of it. And once again, the marsh, man, really, that's we done lost the fight. I don't know, the animals dying, and then nothing they feed on, because that's where they breed at, you know, mostly in the marsh. And you take that away, well, take away the seafood and you take away us, and domino effect, you know.
Well, what happens to you if that happens?
I guess we have to try to find another line of work, I guess, you know. Either that or starve to death. That could be hard for a lot of people, you know. It really will be. That is their whole life, you know, from generation to generation, you know. All their life, nothing but the bayou, nothing but the water, you know. They change with the season, you know. When it's shrimp season, they trawl. When it's oyster season, they fish oysters. You know, crab, they'll crab. Whatever they do, you know, to make a dollar to support their family.
A quick look around reveals something else at stake here. an African-American trucker chats with a Mexican-American oysterman. Men joke and swap stories in thick Cajun and Creole accents. The bloodlines are as mixed as the water, and the communities are as tight as the marsh grass roots.
You know, and down here, this is a tight-knit community, really is. There ain't a person that everybody don't know everybody, who they are, what they're about, where they come from. Their mama, their grandma, their children, their nieces and nephews. That's how close it is down here. You know, you can just pick a lane. You can say, go down 2 miles and the second lane to such and such, and I can tell you who stayed there, where the people at, and what they're going to be doing this evening. Just about them, big. You know?
So I guess the big question is, I mean, if oyster beds die, if shrimping is closed down for a long period of time, what happens to all that?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, you know.
The uncertainty hangs thick. Nearby, Rodney Eckelard sits in the shade. His face shows the work, weather, and worry of 30 years on the water. He's a deckhand now. He once captained an oyster boat until it was lost in Katrina.
See, when Katrina hit us, that destroyed us big time. You know, it took all our homes, just wiped us out. You know, so we're just coming back. And now the oysters is coming back. And if this happened, well, going on again. We're trying our best, you know, to try to get what we can while we can before it kill all our oysters. Yeah.
Do you have any confidence that BP is going to make things right if oyster beds are damaged and you can't work there anymore?
I sure hope so. My confidence is shot so far what I've been seeing, but I sure hope so because, man, it could be a lot of years. You know, all these people down here, that's all they do. You know, fish have been doing this all their life, fishing oysters. You know, if things don't go right, well, how could they live? You know? Oh, yeah, bro. Hard time, dude. Hard time. Right now, yeah, it's hard time. Yes.
Just ahead, the Gulf Coast cleanup faces another challenge. Hurricane season is just days away. Keep listening to Living on Earth.